This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 103, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Henry Viola Hare at HT Viola on Twitter, and I'm here with Alex De Groot. You can find Alex at De Groot Media on Twitter, and I'm, of course, Peter Higgins at Conquest 3 on Twitter. Welcome back, ladies and gents. I hope you're all staying cool, calm, and collected in this balmy heat that we're having. We are absolutely sizzling everywhere up and down the country. I don't think there's anybody complaining that it's raining, although we've had a couple of thunderstorms, I know, periodically coming and going. But it's scorchioed at the moment, so enjoy it while we can. I'll just speaking to Alex and Henry here, and the mention of Wimbledon will probably bring rain when the tennis kicks off. So enjoy it while you can. I'm going to start by doing some housekeeping, ladies and gents. I don't often do this, but I think it's important because we need to consider how we conduct ourselves and behave ourselves on social media. And some people, for some reason, I don't know the reasons why, and I don't know what they're up to, and I don't know what's going on in their lives, but some people invariably come onto Twitter to create a nuisance, to talk nonsense, to have a pop, to undermine, to be passive aggressive, to be rude, to be obnoxious. And I don't know why they need to do it. We've had a particular incident yesterday, completely uncalled for, where our co-host here, Henry, was attacked, wrongly attacked. You know, abused even. And I won't stand for it. I will not have it. You know, I keep saying to people, let's talk and practice kindness. Let's treat people how we wish to be treated. No one's going to come on Twitter and want to be attacked. Yeah. People are going to stop doing stuff because of other people being rude and obnoxious, you know, and being sexist and misogynist. So I just want to call out people and say, look, if you see somebody doing this, yeah, please just have a word with them. I didn't do this on Twitter. I'm using my platform, the podcast, to say, stop. Yeah, stop doing that. It's completely uncalled for. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I keep saying this, you know, one, maybe even 0.1% about Henry Viola, 0.1% about me, 0.1% about Alex De Groot, right? So don't pretend you know these people, yeah, when you don't. So don't go attacking people about stuff that you don't know anything about. Ask a question about their portfolio. Ask a question about the stocks. Have a pop about their stocks and their selection and say, you're rubbish at picking stocks, Conkers. Fine, I can handle that. But don't have a pop at me about something you know nothing about. Yeah, and don't have a pop at Henry or anybody else because it's just not necessary. It's completely uncalled for. Yeah. Henry has his name, Viola Hare, for a reason, right? Some of us are very, very lucky if we find one person in our lifetime we could fall in love with, right? And Henry is very, very fortunate enough to have found one person, yeah? The divorce rates are going sky high for a variety of different reasons all up and down the country. When I was growing up, 10% of people got divorced. Then it was 20%. Then it was 30%. I think we're near it about 40% now, right? So if you found somebody, right, and you're in love with them and you want to take their name, that's down to them. That's down to you. Don't let anybody else tell you what to do. If you're in love with somebody, you're in love with somebody. Let other people that are bitter, twisted, or whatever stuff's going on with them, let them be them. Yeah. End of my rant. Guys, let's crack on with the show. Sorry to embarrass you, Henry. I know you didn't know I was going to do that, but I'm just not having it.
No, I do appreciate that, Peter. And I think the incident yesterday was... it was unfortunate, it was uncalled for, it did upset me, But I do appreciate you having my back, and I appreciate the people that do listen, that are in the audience, rallying round to support, because I did have a lot of people reach out to say, I don't know what that's all about. And I think that's what the Twin Peaks podcast is all about. It's generally a very nice audience. It's generally a very nice community. And that's why, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it. So thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Right. Okay. Let's move on to happier tidings now, folks. Alex, that's not what you joined the podcast for. So apologies, mate. I just had to just get it off my chest because it's been winding me up for over 24 hours and it's not on. Right. The markets, a bit like the sunshine coming out, is actually doing okay despite all the different noises that we've got. Tonight might be a different matter when the US decide what they're going to do with their interest rates. And again, the markets will probably have a wobble by about 7 o'clock. But we did nudge over the past 2 weeks since the last podcast to the lower end, if not almost towards 7,500, sub 500, 7,500. And the FTSE 100 right now, or sorry, at the close of today, closed down, sorry, was plus 7.96 points. It was closed up at 7,602. FTSE All Share, just 2.9 points up at 4,154. And the FTSE AIM 100, All Share, sorry, is still below 800. We're at 794 still. So that hasn't nudged much. It's been a bit of activity, but we seem to be getting to the point where we'll have this grace month of about June before everyone goes on holiday at the end of June, beginning of July. So we might get a couple of weeks. I did say we might end up getting a bit of a boost on the markets. And at the end of the last podcast, a couple of days later, the markets did move upwards. We did get a boost after the debt ceiling thing was agreed. There's still loads of shenanigans going on around that. But essentially, they've kicked the can, as my good friend Phil Oakley would say, down the road in America. So we'll see what happens with that. What are your thoughts, Alex, regarding the debt ceiling debacle or the shenanigans, the conclusion regarding that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've summed it up pretty well, Pete. The US is surprisingly risk on at the moment. I think most people were not positioned for this 3-6 months ago. I think most big bank strategists were looking for the S&P to be 500 points lower than it currently is. I've seen Bank of America and Morgan Stanley jack up their year-end valuations on the S&P for 2023, which tells you that the big banks have been slightly caught on the hop in terms of momentum. You can do the charts on Bloomberg or on any of the platforms. Growth is performing pretty well right now. Growth is outperforming value. You can see that with the big seven who continue to march away in the US. NASDAQ's up strong. So my feeling for the market is that the market is discounting falling interest rates, or certainly that we are peaking right now. Pause today, probably, maybe one more, and then sequential declines for the next 18 months. And, you know, rising interest rates are not the friend of stock investors, equity investors, share pickers. Never have been, never will be. So falling rates, we'll see better markets. Some of that is partly discounted already, but I think there's a lot more to go. The UK is in a different place, I've got to be honest. The UK is in a strange place because just before we came on air, as I think you guys may know, what would have been a big IPO, Wee Soda, was pulled. So this would have been the Turkish soda ash manufacturer. Yeah, just the news just broke like an hour ago. That would have been a big ticket. That would have been $6.5 billion valuation, 600 million new money to be raised. They'd lined up lots of big banks and brokers to work on the deal, but clearly, you know, investors were not willing to play ball. Slightly surprises me because normally you pre-market these deals, so nothing is left to chance. So I'm wondering if something's happened with the company itself. I don't know that, but just speculating, because it sort of gave the impression of a bit of a done deal, but clearly not.
Yeah, so, let me interrupt you a second. Didn't it have, I think it had two major bankers actually backing in the marketing. I'm sure they had at least two.
I seem to remember JP Morgan, Exane, BNP Paribas, Liberum, and a couple of other big boys. normally when you get a syndicate of that, deals don't fail. So
absolutely. And not at this late, and not at this very, very late stage, Alex, either.
That's right. The intention to float was 2 weeks ago. Alistair Warren, who's the CEO of this company, was on Bloomberg the other day, or CNBC, just chatting about, you know, why they want to list in London. And now it's been pulled. So that means no champagne corks tonight if you're an IPO banker, unfortunately. Don't feel too sorry for those guys. But, you know, London needs to get its act in gear in terms of new business. And this would have been a good one. So, yeah, a bit different to the US. But overall, I mean, the general thesis isn't really changing, which is that we're approaching the point at which interest rates are maxing out. The UK is in a bit of a tricky place in some ways because of its own peculiarities. People are still taking money out of the UK market. But the general thesis holds, which is basically that sort of Q3, Q4 into next year, I'd be pretty confident the market will be okay. The other thing I've noticed last couple of days, guys, I'm sure you've seen this, quite a few smaller mid-caps, Robert Walters, MC Saatchi, a few others, slightly pulling down profit expectations for the full year. Now, that companies normally do that when they want to sort of have a reset. They want to get the number down and then get themselves a number they can beat. And so, you know, I would interpret that as sort of people thinking that, you know, they have a fairly clear steer on where they're going to end up now at year end. Because this has been quite a dynamic year. You know, we started off in one place and we've ended up in another place, and it's been pretty fluid. But overall, I'm pretty positive on the outlook for the market with a Q3, Q4 bias.
Okay, thank you for that, Alex. Any thoughts, Henry, on the markets in general?
Yeah, I'm the other end of the spectrum. So, you know, for me, global instability is as high as it's ever been. You know, I mean, last year, the International Monetary Fund bailed out, I don't know how many national governments that couldn't repay their debt. You know, there was Argentina, there was Pakistan, there was Sri Lanka, Zambia, I think, a couple of others in there. You've got the US that's got $31 trillion in debt and has just gone, well, we don't need to worry about that. We'll keep stacking it up. The UK's got the highest tax level we've had for decades, and yet the NHS is underfunded. Just about everything seems underfunded. And so for me, I can totally understand why the markets are tepid, because there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And I'm not sure which way things are going to go at the moment. I could easily see the increases in interest rates tipping us into a recession. There were headlines this morning that Bank of England is now looking at 5.75%. Well, to say a year ago we were bouncing along at zero or whatever it was, you know, very, very low levels. 5.75% is, it might as well be 15% for the damage it's going to do to a lot of businesses.
Henry, for me, the thing is, the bank rate rises have been ongoing for 6 months now. What is the evidence that they are actually affecting inflation? I'm struggling to see at the moment what the transmission mechanism is between jacking up rates when we know it's mainly supply side problems. You're killing demand, but what are you doing about supply?
And I agree with that totally. I think the UK government has got the wrong end of the stick. I think they actually ought to be putting taxes up to take money out of people's pockets. And that would have a much bigger impact on inflation than, you know, hiking interest rates that are only affecting maybe 15% of homeowners. You know, it's clearly not having the effect that the bank is hoping, and they need to try something different. And yet the Conservative government we've got are talking about tax cuts, which to my mind would solidly fuel inflation.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be a fair bit of confusion about how the transmission mechanism works, specifically in the UK, but more broadly. You know, are we jacking up rates? I mean, why are we jacking up rates? If, you know, do you see what I mean? We're just killing the demand side.
Exactly.
A lot of the problems relate to the supply side. So I think for me, this is where monetary policy is unclear really how effective it is. But yeah.
It's the wrong tool. I mean, you look at America and they've got a far broader supply base than we have, and their inflation rate is coming down. Whereas in the UK, where we import an awful lot, it's very, very sticky. So they've got a big problem. I think we've all got a big problem when it comes to inflation.
Yeah,
indeed. I think the thing that concerns me, and I was speaking to Phil Oakley today about this. The problem we've got, or multiple problems we've got, is that a lot of people who've got mortgages have been in a situation where we had this low interest rate environment for so long, and some people chose to take a holiday and pay the minimum that they possibly could rather than paying the most that they could. And now they're in a situation where their interest rates, whether they were fixed or otherwise, are moving up. And if they're on a fix, it's now expiring or expired January, February, March. Da, 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 da. So they've gone from paying 2.5%, they're now going to pay 5.4%, yeah, 4.9%, 6%. So depending on what your mortgage size was, it's effectively doubling overnight. Put on top of that, your gas and electric has doubled over the past 12 months. All of a sudden, you're then, as a consumer, being forced to spend less. And the very thing that we want is for the GDP to be going up. So revenues go up. So taxes intake goes up. People are going, not spending. All I've got to pay out my mortgage, my rent. Rents have gone up. Gas, electricity has gone up. I've got to pay for that first. So people are actually, the people that have got struggling financially are having to force themselves to go down regarding what they would normally spend and prioritize their spend. So if we're living in a consumer-led economy, which I'm led to believe we are, and you don't get people spending on anything other than their basics, and just their gas, electric, mortgage, and the basic foods, then what happens to the economy? It becomes what you've said, Henry, we go into a recession. You know, just need two quarters, bang, we're done. And then we're fighting the inflation still. Interest rates and the economists are going, what do we do next with it? We've peaked out here with interest rates. Inflation is still up here. And, you know, we've got the politicians saying we're going to halve this or get it down to 2% within whatever time frame. Ain't happening. It's not happening. You know, it's just very worrying as to what's going to happen in the next 12 months regarding it all. And unfortunately, there's going to be a few people going to be in a very, very difficult situation. So repossession of cars and people just handing back the keys to the banks regarding their houses. We don't need that.
Something I would perhaps throw into the debate, guys, see what you think about this. The UK is known as being quite a value-oriented stock market. Income is generally one of its stronger equity strategies, equity income. But I just wondered what you guys maybe thought of the fact that we've got a risk-free rate at the moment of about 4.3%. So gilts are yielding 4.3%, which is basically where they were when Liz Truss did her stuff. Last year, October last year. So if you're investing for income, what's an attractive dividend yield in this market? Because your benchmark is basically 4.3.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that's a really good observation. And it's an effect that I've noticed. So I'm an income investor. And a whole chunk of my portfolio, when I did my quarterly review, I went, well, what is the attractiveness of me continuing to hold this? Because I could sell out of it. If I originally bought it for income, I could sell out of it, stick it in gilts, or even a cash savings account and effectively get the same income, but without the equity risk. You know, so for me now, I aim for a 5% yield on my portfolio. Certainly anything under 3.5 for me now is not that attractive.
Yeah. 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 I think companies, it's worth anybody who plays in the income stocks or the dividend stocks, it's worth looking how, what they call the payout ratio. So how much of the earnings per share or the free cash flow does the company pay in dividend? If it's a small proportion, so let's say they pay out 20%. So let's say you have an earnings per share of 10, you pay out 2p in dividend. That's fine. That's comfortably covered.
Well covered, yeah.
But if you're paying out maybe 50%, so 5p out of 10p, just look at the numbers a bit, you know, because what you don't want is to be one of those guys that gets caught holding a dividend stock, but then all of a sudden the company's dividend strategy is amended or changed or downgraded. At the same time that we've got this risk-free rate of 4.3%, maybe going higher. So I think those that have an income bias, they need to just be cognizant of where we're at in terms of gilts and also dividend expectations. If companies having...
I was going to say, and the macro environment that we're in, you know, that things could change. You know, so if you're looking at some stocks, find the stocks or the funds or the investment trust that actually has a progressive dividend. It says in their policy, this is what we're going to do. Regardless of what's going on, we're looking to actually maintain or improve the dividend policy, and we'll keep it covered as well.
I would totally endorse those remarks, Pete.
Okie dokie. Right. I'm going to go back, if I can, because you touched on earlier on, Alex, about the S&P and what's going on with it. And up until yesterday evening, I think it was yesterday evening, if I get the sums right, year to date, the S&P was up 13%. Okay. Only seven stocks, right, were responsible for 93% of that. Rest were 493. That's it, S&P 500. Let me math. Thank you, guys, ladies. Responsible for the other 1.4%.
Yeah.
So going back to what Henry was saying earlier, if we get this market and it starts to misbehave, and those that were carrying the S&P and carrying the market higher, they start to fall over, all of a sudden you've got those seven stocks giving up 13% year to date, and we're in negative territory because the other 493 of those stocks are carrying the markets down. Once the S&P rolls over, what happens to the UK markets? It tends to follow. If they sneeze over there, we get pneumonia in the UK. So I'd be watching the markets going forward regarding it all, because it just seems a little bit top heavy now. We said this last podcast about Nvidia. Everyone was chasing that higher. It's a $1 trillion company. Whoosh, we're having that. We're all going to buy it. And they're still buying it. You know, it's just, it just feels a little bit heavy. Sorry, go on, Alex.
No, just to say, there's some great charts out there at the moment showing how growth stocks, basically crushing value in the US right now.
Yeah.
And it does feel counterintuitive, but that's really what's happening. A lot of that is the AI catalyst.
Absolutely.
You know, let's be honest. I think in our sort of little UK market, we're probably still scanning and screening for proper AI stocks, and we're probably not finding that many. But I do think that AI will be a catalyst here. Sadly, don't probably have the cohorts, which is big enough at this stage.
Well, there was a firm this week I spotted, RWS, is it? The translation firm?
Yeah, that's
now
right.
I know them as a translation business. Somehow they shoehorned the words AI into their update. The next thing you know, everyone's talking about them as an AI stock. And I thought, well, that seems a bit convenient to me.
A lot of that's going to be going on going forward, mate. It's a bit like, you know, we've had it before with tech firms. You know, it's now a tech firm. I remember back in the day, no word of a lie, go back far enough, and you might be on this, Alex, because I know, not being disrespectful to Henry, he's a bit younger than us two, to be fair, right? There was a company who sell bananas. Remember the company Fifes?
Fifes.
And it came out and it says, oh, we now got an internet, da da da, and we're going to go .com and be able to, and I was like, what? And the share price went whoosh, Henry. Back in the early 2000s, I think it was. And I was like, it's a banana company. Yeah. You know, it transports fruit around the world.
Yeah,
but they're bananas.com now.
.com. We've gone online. And it just went for a little period of time. So we're going to get a lot of companies saying they're AI. There are some good quality AI companies in the UK, but not to the behemoth size of being $1 trillion. And hopefully they'll be allowed to grow.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
But yeah, RWS, I hold. You mentioned Saatchi earlier. I think that's my 10th profit warning of this year. So I hold the company. And I was there this morning saying, bang, it's mine. I think it was down 14, 16% this morning. I don't know where it's finished. Another one of mine. I'm like,
away from the portfolio, Peter.
It happens, mate. This is the rites of passage. Alex, I'll tell you, if you get every single stock right, you know, hallelujah to you. Not even Buffett gets it right. Sorry, Alex, go on.
Saatchi is one of those stocks where they had a bid last year with Next 15.
Yeah, was that, I was there, yeah.
You were there? And it was looking like the exit price might be 200p plus, maybe 250. Could be an auction. It looked like both parties wanted to dance. It looked like there was a deal to be done, but ultimately there was no deal. And so now we're down at sort of 140, 150. So my reading of their statement today was that they're not trading badly, but they just wanted to sort of pare back expectations, as I say, reset. And they've got a shrewd management team. So I like Saatchi, but clearly Next 15 last year was a missed opportunity in terms of a nice cash bid or cash and shares bid. There's a few. I mean, Robert Walters today for me was quite an interesting one. I mean, as I'm
sure... They're the recruitment business, aren't they, Robert Walters?
They are. The recruiters are generally like a lead indicator of where we are on the macro sometimes. And, you know, hiring has been nuts for like 18 months, as we all know. Been a buoyant labour market. But they warned today, stock was off, RWA. So... The other agents will also have the same thing, I'm sure. But it maybe also tells us that the labour market is maybe cooling a little bit. So
absolutely.
But in general, I think a lot of companies are going to use the next month or two to gently pull back expectations.
Okie dokie. Alex, when we spoke last time, we were speaking about the tech companies. You keep dropping out, mate. Sorry. We were talking about the tech companies and AI companies, and we had a chap by the name of Michael Evans via our YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed yet, folks, please go onto YouTube and subscribe on there and get us to 1,000, please. So Michael's reply was, "Hi, chaps. Always a good listen. Is there a UK ETF that captures the UK tech shares mentioned?" And my response was, you know what, I'll raise it on the podcast.
The answer is, I don't have one off the top of my head, but there are ETFs which are UK-centric in tech. You need to go to BlackRock, Vanguard, iShares, and just do a scan, basically. But there are ETFs which are UK-centric around tech and growth. I haven't seen an AI one yet.
The iShares has got the Europe 600 telecoms, so that, judging by the name of it, is 600 telecoms businesses across Europe. So I would be very surprised if that doesn't have positions in the four or five you mentioned last time, Alex.
Yeah, agreed. We're getting to the stage with ETFs where you can almost ask them to make up a basket for you, like make up your own ETF. If there isn't something today, there will be. But it's a question of trawling any of the platforms or any of the big providers, Vanguard, as I said, and you're there and you're away. And in a way, that's a lower risk way of playing these themes. So
absolutely. Okay. So what I was doing a bit of trawling, and this is what I found: UK ETFs equivalents of popular US ETFs. So S&P 500 in the US is $VOO or 00. And ours is $VUAG. And that's for the S&P 500. For the NASDAQ, which is normally $QQQ, $CNX1. That's for the NASDAQ. US stock market, general stock market, it's normally $VTI. On the UK, it's $XMUS. Real estate, which is $VNQ. You have IWDP. For US tech, which is what he was referring to now, and for UK equivalents, US tech is $VGT. And for us, it's $IITU. And for going back towards your dividend side of things, Henry, for dividend appreciation, it's $VIG. And for UK, it's $GGRG. And then a worldwide ETF $VT on the UK side is $VWRL, and high dividend yield one is $VYM, and in the UK, $HDLG. And I saw a tweet as well. I hope that answers your question, Michael, and thank you for putting that on the YouTube feedback. Read something here. I'm going to read this out as I find it on my phone. ETFs took in $56 billion last month. Yeah. And basically, especially for this year, accounts for 33% of the total year-to-date numbers regarding investing in the market. So that's Vanguard taking a whole wedge of money into ETFs. That's probably what's helping the market stay steady, because they're trawling and buying everything on tranches regarding everything else. But at some point when the, you know, thematics start to kick in and the quality starts to move the other way and people go, actually, I want my money back now and I want to put it into individual stocks or funds, we'll see what happens with that. But that's a lot of money in 1 month. 53 billion, 56 billion.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah. So we will say it would be nice for them to put some of them in a couple of the stocks that you've got, Alex, or Henry's got, or I've got, so we don't get profit warnings, you know, to generate some revenue, some profitability.
Yeah.
We are where we are.
Guys, I'm going to go dark for a little bit because my iPhone is dying. So I will start.
As long as we can hear you, that's cool.
You can hear me. You've seen enough of me, but you can definitely hear me. So don't cool. worry.
So, no worries. We're going to go to Henry now to just talk about a couple of stocks that's on your radar or things you want to just discuss and raise, Henry, if we can.
Yeah. So I had a really interesting comment on Twitter this week from somebody that asked me about my thoughts on the construction sector. And I've got a background in construction. I've worked for contractors. I've worked in quantity surveying. So I know a little bit about it. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to expand on that because I thought it was quite an interesting question. Mm-hmm. Now, the sector as a whole, for those of you that don't know, construction encompasses a whole raft of different subsectors. So the obvious ones are what are called management contractors. These are the big listed firms like Balfour Beatty, who lead international construction projects. They run the big construction sites. They employ tens of thousands of people. On their projects, they have a raft of what are called specialist contractors. So you will have people that specialize in the concrete or the cement or the logistics or the site security, all different aspects of construction. Some of those are listed, some of them are not. But those are much smaller companies. They're usually doing, you know, 100, maybe 200 million a year in turnover, as opposed to the billions that the big boys do. Mm. You've got tool manufacturers and providers. So I think on the podcast previously, you've talked about Somero, who do concrete floors and tools for that. You've got people that produce materials for building. So bricks, concrete, steel, cable, roof tiles, doors, windows, etc. People that supply the staffing. You've got people that specialize, or firms that specialize in building different types of building, so home builders. And then you've got listed firms that are professional services, so architects, engineers, quantity surveyors, project managers, etc. Now, each one of these subsectors has got different characteristics to them, and some of them I like and some of them I don't. And if people are interested, I'd be happy to go into each one in a bit more detail. But today I wanted to talk a little bit about the home building sector, which is my preferred subsector in the space. And it's my preferred subsector because it's got the strongest margins typically and a structural undersupply in the UK. So there's an organization which is called the Home Builders Federation. It's sort of the trade body for home builders in the UK. And every quarter they produce a home builders update. And their latest one, which was for Q4 22, showed that the number of housing projects actually fell in Q4. So despite mm-hmm. the fact that we've got record numbers of people wanting a new home, the number of housing projects which were granted construction approval actually fell below 3,000 in the quarter for the first time since the data started back in 2006. And the number of projects that was approved in the whole of 2022 fell under 12,500. I think the peak was over 20. So despite the fact that we've got this massive structural demand and an undersupply, we seem to be just building fewer and fewer houses as a country. Now, there are lots of names in the house building sector that you can go and buy. I think most of the audience will probably have heard of the big names like Barratt Developments and Bellway. And I've talked previously about a company I own called Vistry. But there are two companies I'm going to talk about today, one called Tymon and one called Grafton, who kind of build the picks and shovels of the industry. Now, Tymon have divisions. They're quite a specialist builder. They supply security solutions, door hardwares and seals, whereas Grafton is a big multinational supply firm. It's got a range of DIY stores for retail customers. It's got a division that produces mortar. It's got a division that produces bespoke staircases. It's on a fairly attractive PE of just 10. And it gives somebody that was interested in home building a really broad exposure to all the materials that are required for home building without taking the risk of the home builder not being able to sell its homes necessarily. They're still building them. They're using, you know, Grafton's materials, but you've not then got the risk of them being able to sell the properties. Tymon, on the other hand, is a much more specialist product range. So these guys do, like I say, home security, doors, windows, seals, that sort of thing. And it's a much smaller business than Grafton. I believe it's only UK. It's only got a few product lines. It's very, very specialist. And therefore, it's more open to competitive threats. If the industry decides that their windows aren't up to spec, all of a sudden, it's got no customers and its revenue would crash. Whereas that's much less likely to happen with a business like Grafton that's a lot more diversified. So it's up to the listeners, you know, of the podcast. Go away, do your research, have a think about them. But there's two players there that would give you exposure to home building outside of the listed home building sector. So hopefully that's of some interest to the audience. And if you like the house building sector, I'm happy to answer questions on it. And if you'd like to hear more about construction, ping me a message and I'll happily address it in future podcasts.
Cool. Thank you for that, Henry. I think it's an interesting one because we're being told that, you know, we're going to go into a situation where property prices are going to crash. You know, less people are buying houses. Houses are too pricey. Interest rates are stopping the first time buyers, etc., etc. My route regarding the construction sector, my preferred route, and I've had it for some time, has been the brick maker, you know, Michelmersh. So I've had those for quite a while for the income and for hopefully a little bit of capital gains. But that, you know, I've been in and out of the builders. I bought Persimmon when we had the Brexit vote and everybody went, you know what I mean? And it crashed. I think it was yielding something daft like 9 or 10%, and it just went like whoosh. And I bought it. And I remember getting a phone call from a fund manager many years ago saying, "What are you doing, Pete? Don't be buying them just yet. We're still selling and other people are selling. Don't do it." And I was like, I don't care what. I never take any notice of what other people are doing. If I see something and I think it's a bargain, I'm gonna go in and buy it. But that's just me, you know. And I think, unfortunately, I think some of the house builders that we've got and some of the construction firms I've got, they look like bargains right now, and the dividend yields are 6%, 7%, 8%. I suspect between now and Christmas some of them can go even lower.
I'd agree with that.
So, you know, I'd watch some people going in, oh, I'm going to buy that now. It could be the bottom, you know. And I keep saying this, it doesn't matter if it's not the bottom. If you're holding it for 3 years or 5 years, then you should be fine. With a dividend yield and some capital gains over 5 years, you should be fine. But the problem we've got is that the vast majority of individuals now on Twitter that say they're long-term investors, it actually means that they're holding the stock for 3 weeks or 3 months, not 3 years. You know, you ask the average person on Twitter, what's the stock you've got in your portfolio that you've held the longest? Yeah, and what's your average hold period for your portfolio? It's not 5 years. And after 5 years is when you can say you're a medium-term investor. After 7 to 10 years, you're a long-term investor.
There's not many people holding anything for 7 years. My portfolio, I want exposure to different sectors in different weightings. And so the firms that I'm buying and that I'm investing in, I'm looking to hold them because I want exposure to that sector long term. Now, I might trade in and out of individual names over the course of 3, 4, 5 years, but I still want exposure to those sectors. There are very few sectors that I want zero weighting to. I think the only one I've got a real aversion to is consumer discretionaries, you know, your retail stocks, because people are so mercurial about what they want. One minute we're all desperate to wear suits, the next minute everybody's in t-shirts, one minute everybody's playing with Games Workshop, the next minute they've all piled into, you know, toy trains or whatever it's going to be. It's a very very difficult sector to know where it's going, and so for me it's easier just to keep my nose out of that one.
Absolutely. Are you there, Alex? Have you got any thoughts on the construction builders? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to defer to Henry on the stock picking in construction. So I don't have a lot to add there, really. Two names which I just want to sort of put out there, just to sort of fly a kite a little bit. And I know one of them, Pete, is a name you know quite well. Tremor, T-R-M-R. Which this week has announced a rebranding. It's going to call itself Nexen, N-E-X-X-E-N. In fact, I think if you go on the corporate website, it's already rebranded. Now, you know, why is this important? Generally, in my experience, when a company rebrands itself or gives itself a new sort of corporate strapline, it sort of tells you that internally, the company is beginning to gird its loins for you know, a change in strategy or some fairly material cost cutting or restructuring. And for those on the call that know Tremor, they'll probably remember companies like Rhythm One and Blinks and Taptica. And obviously this all came out of Autonomy originally back in the day, many years ago.
Absolutely.
So the multiples on this stock are incredibly low. There is very little faith in the story. But the truth of the matter is that it's an important part of the ad tech ecosystem that can sometimes feel a little bit obscure to the outsider, what they do when we start talking about demand side platforms, supply side platforms, all that might seem a little bit strange, but these are legitimately big players within the ad tech space. They don't always help themselves in terms of how they come across, but I think this is a sort of anomalously low valuation. And as I say, you don't really normally change your corporate name unless there's something else going on internally. So just to sort of flag that, Nexen or Tremor, as it's probably better known, T-R-M-R. And then the second one, I mean, what do we know about the market at the moment? We know there are no IPOs taking place. We know that there's not a lot of fundraising taking place, but we know that there's quite a lot of M&A taking place. So I just wanted to flag I just wanted to flag NCC Group, Pete. NCC Group, Manchester-based cyber consultancy business, share price about 90p, had a big warning probably March time this year, has lost a lot of credibility through that. But we do know that cyber remains one of the key themes, both for the CIO within any company, but also for consumers. Like, every day of the week, right, we read about somebody getting hacked. Capita at the moment, I think, is the one in the newspapers. And NCC, you know, for all that they've not guided very accurately, for all that they've had inflationary pressures within their own business, there's something there of value. And I think it's more than the current 90p share price reflects. Now, it's one of those names that you probably have to sort of cross your fingers when you buy, because companies that have had a warning are prone to have another warning. But I think genuinely there's something in NCC that's not reflected in the current valuation for those that are probably prepared to look, you know, maybe 12, 18 months out, mainly on the back of the fact that they have a real body of expertise in cyber. So Tremor and or Nexon, I should say, and NCC would be two names for those that have a sort of tech orientation or software orientation. These aren't companies that are flawless. They have lost people money.
Just for transparency, I should say I own NCC and I'm one of the people that have lost a lot of money on it.
Well, Henry,
I'm still in there.
Far from me, this should not be construed as investment advice, but sometimes averaging in, if possible, is not a bad strategy. Yeah. I just have an instinct for these things. I know when companies, you know, sometimes you've got to think, what is the theme in the market? What's really going on out there? And for me, the big theme is M&A, where the buyer is actually, funnily enough, not really private equity, but other corporates. Other corporates using their currency, using their balance sheet to do deals. And really NCC, you know, 250 million market cap now. I mean, that's small change for most US software businesses.
Indeed. I was going to touch, I've got it on here to talk about M&A, FinTech, and you've covered it here, I think, Alex. Global stock exchange, NASDAQ, of all people, right, have made their biggest acquisition in the company's history, right, by buying Adenza, right, a provider of software used by banks and brokerages for $10.5 billion.
Yeah.
In a cash and stock deal. Financial services giant, FIS, confirmed that it will acquire Bond, the bank as a service company, that previously raised $42 million recently, and that was at a $182 million valuation. So they haven't said exactly what price they're paying for it. It's undisclosed. And then a stock that I only recently bought in March, Alpha Financial Software, UK builders of software for asset management companies, has received numerous bids from EQT and several other buyout firms for around $773 million. So we'll see what happens. I think they've got until the middle of July to put up or shut up or, you know, declare a bid definitively. I think it's 208 is the numbers they're talking about at the last bid. So we'll see what happens with that. Private equity firm Nordic Capital is pursuing an acquisition of banking software provider Tenemus for around $5.4 billion. So there's big money being thrown around here for Tenemus. An online payroll benefits HR provider, Trinet, is being hired by Morgan Stanley to help it explore a sale for a £7 billion price point. And then you've got Watanzia, a UAE provider of credit decision-making software, has hired Molis to explore the potential of a sale. So private equity listed, there's lots of M&A going on. I've been saying this for nearly a year. These companies that are sitting here, lowly priced, have got the UK discount going on for some bizarre reason. If it's a good enough company, and irrespective of debt, if somebody sees that it's a good add-on, bolt-on, whilst the market is near its nadir, and they can make some improvement on their margins, improve their cash flows, they're going to snap them up, and we're going to be less and less and less UK-listed companies going forward, because these deep-pocketed companies are going to come and just snap them up. You know, we wanted Arm to list here. It looks like someone listed in New York. We sold a saying it was going to come, and Alex just pointed out to me, I didn't see it, that it's not going to list. It's like, come on already. You know, we need some activity in our markets. And I think we're going to see, I've been saying to people, keep an eye out, Alex, on the other side of it. The wealth management companies, I've seen massive consolidation regarding that space. Well, I'll talk about that on another podcast going forward. I just see, because they're all squidged, their margins are just getting squeezed because there's no IPOs. Yep. You know, there's a lot of the lack of fundraising, and the stocks that they hold within their, you know, investee portfolios have been drifting down. So what do?
Yeah.
Consolidate. Yep. Merge with your friend across the road.
You know?
Get rid of one HQ.
Yeah.
Just have the one.
Yeah. If you're in a corporate, if you're in a boardroom and the revenue outlook for the next 12 months is a bit flat, that then you know, you look to do a deal. You look for restructuring benefits. And that buys you time. That buys you 6 to 9 months of time. And you can generate some profit growth through cost cutting. Maybe not through top line, but through cost cutting. So yeah, absolutely. This reminds me a little bit of sort of like 2009 in a way. I don't think company balance sheets were as bad as they were then. but there was a sort of feeling of companies, you know, having to deal with a sort of relatively tough macro backdrop. But the balance sheets aren't as bad. I mean, what sort of different for what for me, what differentiates this market to like 10, 15 years ago is generally company debt levels are not that high. But nonetheless, I mean, like as Henry said, in terms of consumers, I mean, you know, the sort of run up in interest rates is really quite extraordinary everywhere. But it feels acute here in the UK.
And it's those hiking interest rates, it very much depends on the business and how it uses debt. So consumers are one side of the issue, but it also affects firms that are reliant on debt to fund themselves. And this is where my aversion to the construction industry part of it comes from, because the margins are so thin that the debt that they've got is it can very quickly become unserviceable as debt levels start to tick up. If they have a couple of projects stall and cash flow starts to dry up, not that much, all of a sudden you find them falling over.
But Henry, the other bit I thought you were going to touch on is the fact that a lot of them, the margins are so thin, so any sort of cost add-ons and the project just goes over, you know, cost spend just goes out and then they get litigated because the, you know, I'm trying to think, was it Galliford? I think it was Galliford back in the, a little while back, we're doing a big project up in Scotland and that went overspent, and then they got litigated for it. So there's always this risk of overspend because they've fought so hard to get the contract, margins are tiny, and then they go problem, cost of equipment goes up, cost of materials go up, and they're knackered.
That debt management piece, if you've got a good CFO that knows what they're doing, then it's not a problem. You can service the debt, cash comes in, cash goes out, you roll over your bonds as they come due, and everything's tickety-boo. If you've not got a CFO that knows what they're doing, you stack up a shed load of debt, and when it comes time to refinance, the interest rate goes from 2% to 9%, and the margins haven't kept up, and all of a sudden you either you can't refinance or you can't keep up with the interest payments. And so anybody that has got an actively managed portfolio, I'd really, really encourage you to start to get into the weeds of what the balance sheets look like, what does the debt profile look like, when is it coming due, how much cover have they got to service the debt, and make sure you understand it, because the last thing you want is to wake up at 7 o'clock tomorrow and find out that your biggest holding suddenly can't refinance their debt undertakings.
I absolutely agree. Is there anything you want to add to that, Alex?
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I think he's gone.
Stunned in
silence. Stunned silence. Right. Okay.
He's I'm going to go and check his debt undertakings.
Yes. I'm just going to take a pause here and communicate what's been happening with the Twin Peaks challenge of raising money for Memphis, which is a charity we've chosen this year. So for those that want to make and please make a donation, you can find it at www.justgiving.com/fundraising. Twin Peaks Challenge 2-3. We had at Up the Toffees, a chap called Glenn, And his comments was, keep up the great work. Really happy to support you all. And Glenn kindly donated £25 plus £6, 25 gift aid. So thank you ever so much for that, Glenn. Really, really top appreciate man. It. And yeah. and that I put said with the wrong numbers last week. The correct numbers, we're on 1968 at the moment with that donation. So if you can make a donation, ladies and gents, please, please, please do so at the Just Giving page. And then I want to talk about briefly the UK Investor Show, which was last Friday. And I was blessed to have Gervais Williams, Gabriel Boyle of Troy Asset Management, George Barrow of Polar Capital, Stephen Yu of Blue Whale Capital, and Algie Hall came in as a late substitute, but a great substitute, stand-in for Alex, who is it still in Scotland with stuff going on. It's the reason why he couldn't come down to London to be on this thing. And we talked about finding quality stocks in difficult markets, which will be out on video, hopefully in the next 2 weeks, if not 4 weeks. And it was a fantastic panel session. So I just wanted to thank a few people that actually made large treks across the UK to come and support me on that particular panel session, which I hosted. And that's Michael T. I think it may or may not be back from holidays because he was gone on holiday after Friday. Roger Green. So thank you ever so much, Roger, for coming and supporting me. Jared Maloney, that came and supported me as well. And Sanjay Kariya, who travelled distance as well to come and support me at the UK Investor Show. So thank all of you for coming to the show, and everyone else that came to the show that I didn't recognise. Thank you ever so much for coming. The video will be out shortly. And that's about it for me, in the sense of I want to talk about one stock that I don't own, and then talk about looking for undervalued stocks and staying away from the hype names. I might go to the hype names first. So I found this really, really interesting tweet. Everyone talks about the stocks that have done the best returns over a 20-year period. And they often talk about Apple and Amazon being absolutely huge returns. And they wouldn't be wrong, okay? So you go back to November 2001. And since that date, yeah, you've got 22 years almost up. Up to, 20 years. Go from November 2001 to November 2021. Apple was up 45,719%.
45,000?
45,000. Yeah, all the splits. Think about all the splits they've done as well over the years, right? 45,000, Henry.
I'm speechless.
And 719%. Everyone talks about Amazon. Amazon done 40,497%. Not shabby. £1,000 in that, do a nice chunk of change in your portfolio. Yeah. 10,000, you're on your way to retirement and financial freedom. However, how many people, Henry, have you heard talk about Monster, which is the monster drink company?
I knew you ever heard that mentioned.
Have you ever heard that company ramp to the yin yang?
The only reason I know that is because of what you're about to say. And I had no idea about this until about a week ago. So do tell us.
What I'm about to say, Henry, is that in that 20-year period from November 2001 to November 2021, that share price rallied, soared, flew, rocketed, whatever adjective you want to use, 100,011%.
100,011%?
Yeah, 111.927%.
You couldn't make it up, could you? I mean, ladies and gents, let's be honest. If any of us even had 10% of that, you know, we'd be down the pub buying everyone around quicker than you could say Jack Robinson.
And it wouldn't be monster fizzy drinks, would it?
Exactly. Oh, 100. And it just goes to show, I think the most startling thing about that is that you never hear Monster mentioned. I didn't even know it was listed until it started floating around on social media about a week ago with that comparison. And it just took my breath away, because who among us even thought about it? Of course you don't.
nobody want, well, very few people want to buy a company, any company. Nobody wanted to buy Apple 15 years ago, 20 years ago. It's like, oh, it's too expensive. It's never going to make it. They've had trouble with it. We don't trust blah, 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 da, da, da. Amazon, ooh, they only sell books, da, 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 da. Now it's like people are chasing it. Same as Nvidia. People are chasing it now. It's like, guys, it's gone from 100 million, sorry, 500 million to a billion to 50 billion. Why are you buying it now at almost a $1 trillion valuation? Or because it's going up?
I think part of that comes back to Alex's point on the last podcast about people's awareness of stocks and more specifically the research that's done into them. So if you mention Apple to somebody now, they will tell you it's got a great ecosystem. It's got a great moat. Yep. It's got really good profit margins. It's got the Apple Store. It's got the headsets, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you know that? Because it's been explained for the most part by Warren Buffett, who has explained in very, very clear terms over and over and over again to his shareholders in Berkshire Hathaway why he invested in it. Now, most people, when they talk about Apple, regurgitate what they've heard him say. Now, the problem with Monster is that you don't have that same eloquent, insightful mouthpiece that's done the due diligence and done the research to elucidate or illuminate the those concepts for us. And so I couldn't honestly tell you why Monster has been so successful. I've not got a clue. Like I say, I didn't even know it was listed, to be perfectly honest. And yet it's got something that it's done really right. And so for me, the learning is go and have a look at Monster and figure out why it's gone up 111%. What about their business model was so wildly successful above and beyond Coke or Pepsi or Dr. Pepper or whoever else, Fevertree, because they're all in the same space. And yet I don't see any of them doing 111,000%.
Absolutely. Absolutely, mate. And this is why I say sometimes to people, the ones that are the stocks that are being talked about, that are being ramped, that everyone else is clustered into, I tend to just, if they're all, everyone else is in that, I'm looking elsewhere. Yeah. So I'm going to give a stock here that I don't hold for people to research very, very briefly. A food company, ticker symbol HFG, Hilton Group. And it's had a bit of a difficult, sticky time, but my view is, given the fact that everyone's moving down in a sense of from luxury down to almost basics, and people are watching every single penny, I think it could be a company that has a bit of a, not necessarily a turnaround, but eventually can transition from where they are now. So I'm not going to say too much about it, but as a research idea, as I always say to people, it's not a recommendation. It's a global business, an idea to go away and research. Hilton Foods, Hilton Group, HFG. Go and have a little look at it. See what you find. See what you think. Look at it. Track it. Do some deep dive into it. Get to know the company. Have a look at what it's doing. Look at its debt. Look at its cash. Look at everything about it. Let's have a think. Have a think about it.
And have a think about what else is in that space as well.
Absolutely.
Because Absolutely. Quite often I will look at a name and go, well, I don't necessarily like that, but I like what they do. I just don't like the way they're doing it. And so that opens doors to other companies, maybe in other markets or other, you know, other bits of the sector. So think outside the box with your research.
Yeah, always. And also going back to what you were saying before, Henry, it's about thinking and investing long term. Long term. Right, ladies and gents, I think we lost Alex. He's once again, Scotland's done him. You know,
his bank manager's after him, I reckon.
Absolutely. Oh, you know what? Something I forgot, Henry, as well. When I was having a conversation with about the markets and all the rest of it, my good friend Philip Oakley, he listens to the podcast, believe it or not, bizarrely, and he enjoys it. And he sends his best wishes to you and says, thank you for what you're doing and to keep up the good work because you're doing remarkably well, or words of that, I'm paraphrasing. But he just sends you his best.
Very kind of him. I'm a big fan of Phil's work. Big fan.
Aren't we all, mate? Aren't we all? Well, it's nice to hear that he's a fan of yours, mate, as well.
A pleasure.
All right. Ladies and gents, that's a wrap. We started with three, we've ended up with two. Say again?
You've forgotten something very important, Peter.
I'm going to do that next podcast, Henry.
Oh, okay. In which case, I'll next podcast. Down.
Ladies and gents, what Henry's prompting me on, because Henry's the guy that crunches the numbers for the Twin Peaks challenge regarding the investing portfolio, right? And we could go on now for another 10, 15 minutes and talk about it, but I'm conscious of just keeping these quite tight now and making them an hour. So we will announce the winner for May. In the next podcast, which will be recorded on the 28th. And probably the week after that, we'll be announcing the winner for June. But we will talk about that winner going forward in the next podcast with all the stats and what they had in the portfolio, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just trying to keep this within the hour parameter. We'll announce the winner. I know it was quite a close one as well, so we'll talk about that in a little while. But thank you for pointing that out. It's me just running out of time and conscious of, there's a bit of people saying, well, why don't you just carry on? Just trying to keep this to an hour, and then we'll talk about it within the hour of next time. And also, hopefully, we'll have Alex with bandwidth so we can talk about it a bit further as well. All right, Henry, thanks again. Thank you ever so much for joining me and co-hosting this with me. Alex, wherever you are, thank you ever so much again for coming on here and co-hosting with me. Ladies and gents, that's a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 103. Please be kind if you're going to come on Twitter. Please be kind if you're in the community doing stuff. And if you can, do whatever you can for your friends, neighbors, and family. We don't know how long we've got here. This is not a dress rehearsal. So be kind, stay blessed, and do what you can for the people and show some love. Until next time, take care. God bless. Enjoy the sunshine. Stay hydrated. Bye for now.
Bonne chance.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.